ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name is Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. In a moment, you'll meet some of the team bringing fresh seafood from Wadair into Darwin for sale. Also this afternoon, you'll meet a young ringer getting ready to head to the United States to pursue a career in college rodeo.
Mainly I want to go to a college rodeo because there are coaches there to help me improve, and also just the fact I can get on a lot of better quality horses and a lot more of them.
And remember a few weeks back we were talking about rabbit meat and how it's really hard to come by at the moment and it's a bit expensive. Well, guess what? I've found some.
We do have rabbit available. It's a hard process to get hold of, but I do have some in stock, yes.
Yep, let's go and buy some rabbit on the program today. And if you've got any thoughts on how I should whoop it up, let me know. 0487 99 1057 is the text number here at the Country Hour. Buying rabbits and plenty more on the program today. A reminder, though, if you do need to duck out to the paddock for whatever reason, you can always download the podcast and listen at a time that suits you. First up this afternoon, I want you to meet the Wadair Sea Farmers, who have been very busy this year catching mud crabs and bringing the catch into Darwin for sale. Now, this is still a very new venture for one of the Territory's most remote communities, but they're kicking goals. They're having a few wins. Tom Robinson caught up with some of the team while they were in Darwin learning some new skills.
Out the back of the Darwin Fish Market, next to the Fisherman's Wharf, the Wadair Sea Farmers are getting a lesson in how to handle, tie and package Territory mud crabs. They're a group of young men from one of the biggest Aboriginal communities in the Northern Territory. They work hard to catch the crabs, which are sold locally and here in Darwin. Tyson Crocombe says he's already been learning while working in Wadair.
I've been experienced tying up crabs, how to grade them, how to tell if they got full of meat or not. Yeah, lots of learning.
The Wadair Sea Farmers operate under Aboriginal coastal licences, which are held by the Aboriginal Sea Company. And Tyson says it provides opportunities to a lot of people in the region.
Got some families that works there at the sea farm. Cousins, uncles, brother-in-law. It's like a community effort. It's all Aboriginal blokes working at that sea farm company. They're really proud of it. They're saying, keep it up, keep doing what you're doing. One day you'll make it.
There aren't many job opportunities in places like Wadair, and the Sea Farmers Project means people like Joel Martin can stay home and work on the local land and seas. This is a big improvement on Joel's previous work.
Picking up kids in the morning for school, then when the school finished, pick them up, drop them back off at home.
Is this better than that?
Yeah.
For people like Tyson Crocombe, getting a job at the Wadair Sea Farmers means having employment for the first time ever.
I wasn't really working. Sea farming is my first job.
How does that feel?
Makes me feel good, proud.
The guys I met in Darwin are still young. They're in their 20s, but they're already inspiring the next generation of people who are looking for work in the seafood sector. Tyson says English is not the first language for most people in Wadair, and he tells young people it's the most important skill they need to land a job with the Sea Farmers.
Skill kids. We get that a lot. You gotta finish school first, get some English, and then you start work. That's the main thing, English.
Another one of the Sea Farmers, Ben Dutinga, was one of the first students to complete Year 12 at the local Wadair school for more than 10 years when he graduated back in 2020.
Well, I was in school, and I finished school there, Port Kings Wadair. I graduated, and I was starting to look for to get a job. Well, my first job, I didn't like it because it wasn't my thing.
The project is also set to grow. Johnson Katura from the local Tamara Development Corporation coordinates the Wadair Sea Farmers. He says they're building a shop to sell more seafood to local people and an aquaculture facility based on blacklip oysters to diversify the operation.
A lot of the catch at the moment, especially for the mud crabs, we are sending it to Darwin, but we are going to be opening a seafood shop in Wadea, so some of our catch will go into community so the local mob can buy it. The rest will come to Darwin. And for the oysters, we are still at a level where it's still in development. So maybe in about 1 or 2 years, we'll officially and commercially sell our oysters.
Johnson says running the program in one of the most remote parts of the territory is a big challenge.
You cannot throw out the challenges that you work with in community. Accessibility is only for 6 months a year. In the wet season, you cannot drive there, so you only have to fly. So for people who are in this industry, it's hard for us to sort of bring our catch into the market timely. Of course, there has not been a lot of training in, for example, in the aquaculture space. So part of the initiative and this program was to start training. So we, part of our culture as sea farmers is capacity building. We train a lot of the local people when they come to work with the sea farmers. So all that was not there before sort of became a challenge, because at the end of the day, we would not be able to do our job if we did not have the skills.
Johnson hopes this program is a source of pride for people in Wadea.
I think everybody should be proud of what the people in Wadea are doing. They have a very beautiful country. They are beautiful people. There is opportunity in the aquaculture sector in that place. And I think that resources should be focused there. And they will see the results.
That is Johnson Katura from Wadea speaking to Tom Robinson. And just on the topic of seafood, tomorrow is a really big day for Australia's seafood sector, because after years of lobbying, the federal government has introduced national seafood labelling laws. So starting tomorrow, July 1, restaurants, cafes, pubs, takeaway shops right around this nation must label seafood dishes according to their origin. Here is Seafood Industry Australia's Chief Executive, John Ackerman, explaining that new system.
So on the menu itself, whether it be the menu in the venue, whether it be on the boards, on their website, etc., they will have to mark whether it is Australian against the actual seafood dish, whether it's imported or whether it's mixed. It's simply just a simple labelling on menus, so consumers themselves will be able to see where their seafood originated. Gives them greater choice.
Yeah, so this all kicks off tomorrow, and if this new system sounds a bit familiar, you'd be right, because the Northern Territory has really led the way on this. The NT introduced seafood labelling laws back in 2008, so we've been doing it for yonks. The national system starts tomorrow, and it will have some implications for the Northern Territory. So to tell us more about that, tomorrow I'll be joined by Daniel Capps, who's the Chief Executive of the NT Seafood Industry Council. What will this new national system mean to you next time you go to buy a bit of seafood in the Northern Territory? Hope you can tune in tomorrow from 12:30.
Hello, my name's Tyson. I work at the Wadea Sea Farmers, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
It's 22 to 1. In a moment, we're off to go and buy some rabbit. I've found some for sale in Darwin. Let's go and buy some. And then what should we do with it? If you've got any good recipes, got any good thoughts on how to whoop up some rabbit this afternoon, let me know. 0487991057. One message here says, Matt, rabbit recipe. My grandmother's recipe always started out with, first catch your rabbit. Yeah, but then what? We'll get the rabbit, don't you worry about that. And I don't think we even need to catch it. We'll just go and buy it. But then what? What did Grandma do next? Dear Textee, 0487991057 is the text number here at the Country Hour. Another message here says, ate rabbit as a kid, it was yum. Yeah, but how? What was the recipe? What did you do with it? That's what I'm keen to learn, keen to steal from you this afternoon.
0487991057. Let's go and buy some rabbit next after a bit of Troy Cassadaly. That is Troy Cassadaly right across the territory on the ABC. You are tuned into the Country Hour. A few weeks ago on this program, we were talking about rabbit meat and how expensive it has become. Well, guess what? I have found some rabbit for sale in Darwin. Up next, let's go and buy some.
I'm Jacko Neil Valentine. I'm ringing at Harkata Station, and I'm originally from Calliope in Queensland, and I listen to the Country Hour.
G'day, I'm Indrek Herbert from Prime Meats NT in the Northern Territory in Darwin.
Indrek, I am here today to buy some rabbit. What have you got?
We do have rabbit available. It's a hard process to get hold of, but I do have some in stock, yes.
You've brought it out. Tell us what we're looking at here.
Well, it's quite an expensive piece of meat. Considering there's not that much, there's more bone than meat. It's $30 a piece, which around 900 grams. So you're looking at about $40 to $45 a kilo now. So there's be lucky to feed two, to be honest.
Where have you got these rabbits from? Do you know?
We have brokers all around Australia. These ones come out of Queensland. Whether the rabbit themselves out of Queensland, I'm not 100% sure. They could possibly come from New South Wales as well, because they've got reach into New South Wales from the Queensland market. It's hard to get, like I said. So being the last couple on hand at the moment, we'd be starting to ask questions, and we might get another box of rabbit in 3 weeks' time or so.
So how much rabbit would you sell in a month?
Not much.
Not much.
People are scared of the price.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm about to spend $30 to get a rabbit, and I'm just looking at everything else here in the display cabinet.
Until you move to your prime meats, you know, your beef, everything's basically under the $30, so $40. So
I could walk away with some lovely Scotch fillets.
Yeah, or a rabbit.
Or a frozen rabbit. Wow. Just looking at the size, I mean, to me, it looks pretty close to feral rabbit size, not the big plump ones that you can see in farms. I could be wrong, but
no, I don't think so, because I have seen them a lot bigger. But the reality is, up here in Darwin, we don't really see too many rabbits, so we never had the opportunity to chase them down and hunt them and stuff like that. So I've got no idea on the average size, but these seem to be quite small for what they are.
If you were taking home this rabbit tonight, Indrek, how would you be cooking it?
I'd have to look up a nice classic French stew sort of thing, something like
yeah.
that.
Yep.
It's been a while since I've looked at the recipes, but yeah, that's how I'd be moving.
I'm going to go Kentucky Fried Bunny.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to cut off as much meat as I can get off it, I think, and crumb it. Crumb it for myself and the kids.
Rightio. Rightio. Well, I haven't heard that method, but it's
one of the most famous stories in our family is Mum and Dad inviting a bunch of friends over, cooking up Kentucky Fried Bunny, but telling everyone it was chicken. And
right.
no one knew.
Well, a lot of people do that with the crocodile that we've got and schnitzel it, and then don't tell the kids that it's crocodile.
Unreal. Well, it's time to buy it. I will take one rabbit, please. And when's the last time you reckon you sold one?
Oh, no, I only sold one yesterday.
But, okay, all right.
Yeah, it is far and few. At the moment, with the tourists in the Northern Territory all coming up here, they there's old classic country boys and that still do like their rabbit. And
they want their underground mutton.
Yes, that's right, yep. So we do, this time of year, we do move a few, but not in any great numbers. And then during the wet season, when all the tourists leave, it's basically none. So.
Right. So even if rabbit was more readily available, it's not something you'd be seeking out?
No, not unless the price went down by half.
Yeah.
And we'd have it on the counter a little bit more, but
it's hard to move at $30 a throw.
Yes, most definitely. Like, 2 years ago it was 20, now it's 30. So you,
wow.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a jump, and it's, the value's not there as far as I can see, but we do have it for those people that want it.
Well, I appreciate you getting it for me, Hendrick. I'll take one. Thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour.
Cheers, Matt. Thanks.
Yeah, big thanks to Hendrick Irvett and the team at Prime Meats NT. I've got my rabbit. I am ready to go. And maybe I need to rethink how to cook it, because there's some ripper suggestions coming through on the text line this afternoon. I've got one here from Ian in Alice Springs. He says, use a bit of Szechuan chicken mix. Put that onto the meat. Fry it with a bit of veggies. And it's yum and easy. Says Ian this afternoon. Mark in Alice says, Matt, get a few secret herbs and spices, cut into quarters, crumb, deep fry it. It's better than the kernels. Well, Mark, maybe that's my version of Kentucky Fried Bunny. That's what I'm thinking of. Some other listeners aren't so sure. Someone here says, are you serious? You live in Barramundi Central and you're paying for some stinky Bugs Bunny? Someone else says, Matt, have you ever eaten crow? You boil it in a big pot with a rock for about 2 hours, and then you throw the crow away and you eat the rock. I have heard that recipe before, but remember, you've got to put some salt and pepper in there. Otherwise, the rock's just, it's just not as good. Oh, and someone has sent me a picture. It's of an old handwritten recipe for rabbit pie. Oh, producer Sam, can you see that picture and that little handwritten ingredient list? Rabbit pie. Now we're talking. Oh, that looks good. I've got to make the most of it. $30 a rabbit. Another message here says, g'day, Matt. I've eaten rabbit all my life. Only ever caught them myself, trapping when I was younger, and then ferreting and shooting them. Simple way of cooking them, flour, salt and pepper, shallow fry. And if young rabbit, well, that's what you do for young rabbit, sorry. And if they're older, try the recipe for the rabbit pie. Aha, that's from John, who's currently out near Cassilis in New South Wales waiting for rain, he says. John, thank you very much. Wow. Rabbit. Now I've got some big decisions to make. These are lovely recipes. I appreciate it. 0487991057. On the Country Hour this year, we've spent so much time talking about the rise of urea prices. Fertilizer's just gone gangbusters this year. But there's some good news for growers. I'll tell you more about this next.
Grab July's Gardening Australia for instant winter colour, bird-friendly natives and tips on growing potatoes. Plus 150 tough plants for tricky locations. Gardening Australia from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
Yep, in some good news for farmers, the cost of some fertilisers has dropped. It has dropped a lot. Some fertilisers are now at levels that we were paying before the war in Iran started. So it's gone through the roof and now come right back down, especially urea. It's come well off those record highs that were seen in April, May. But as agronomist Sean Heidrich explains, it will take a bit of time for these savings to be passed on to growers.
Yeah, it's still very fluid, the whole fertiliser side of things. With the ceasefire that's enacted at the moment over in the Iranian conflict, ships have started to move. That's also meant that product is starting to come through the strait, which has led to a softening in prices now. So it's actually urea pricing out of the Middle East now is down below where it was pre-war, which is, of course, allowing for speculation by spot traders and that now to take advantage of the market that's coming or the product that's coming. Iran appears to be dropping the price significantly so that they can start to move product and then get some income coming into the country as well.
What does that mean at the moment for consumers of fertiliser?
So, you know, we've still got that time of the products on the water. I mean, there is a high price product coming into the country that people secured before this point in time. So, you know, the long term or the medium term outlook is that the prices will come back and soften, but it's going to be a matter of time before people clear the stock, that the high price stock that they've already got, or get stuck with it. So it's going to come down, but it'll also depend on how long the ceasefire stays in place as well.
So I guess you would have your stock that's in the storeroom now, you'd have the stock that's coming that's been bought, and then the other stock is that, and they would all have sort of be at different prices?
Yeah, that's the situation. It's been a real double whammy because of the conflict in Iran, but it also the CIQ closure in China. Us as a branch here, we're, I suppose, a little bit fortunate. We don't supply a lot of broadacre products, so we rely on the cal nitrates, pot nitrates, those sorts of products out of China. They've been closed. There's talk of that opening again in August. So, you know, if that opens, then we'll have access, and not just ourselves, but, you know, the whole market will have access to, you know, that lower price product out of China. At the moment, we still get product out of Europe, but because of the demand, it's the pricing and shipping has you know, caused that prices to be elevated as well. So it's a real, you know, cat and mouse at the moment. People is, you know, the traders are saying, well, the stuff that's on water now from Europe and those places is going to land, you know, in and around when the CIQ opens, if it does, in August out of China. So, you know, there's a gamble of whether you buy the high price stock or you wait and hope like hell that the Chinese CIQ opens and you can get that lower price stock through that outlet.
And how much of a difference in prices are there?
Yeah, there's a significant increase in, you know, the pricing that came out of Europe or product coming out of Europe has gone up significantly compared to where it was. And that's just around supply and demand. You know, they couldn't produce any more product. People wanted product or needed product to get crops in. So, you know, it's jumped significantly. You know, urea at the peak of the war was up over $1,000 a ton easily retail. You know, that pricing in the spot market's now come back significantly, so it is back below where it was pre-war.
Yeah, and of course you've got to do the right thing and order it in and make sure you've got it, because you don't want to be caught short, but then you can't really mark it down. I mean
it's the joys of doing business in a situation like this. Like I say, it's so fluid at the moment. You know, farmers are some of the best gamblers at the best of times, but us in the retail side of things that are supplying the products to them, we've had to take those and you know, we rode it through COVID, and that's still in everyone's mind, the issues that we had there and high price stock that we got caught with. So you know, everyone's very cautious at the moment and not trying not to allow themselves to get into that position, but also trying our hardest not to allow, you know, disappoint our customers and not be able to supply product for them as well.
That is agronomist Sean Hedrick speaking to Eliza Bellage. He works for Muir's. So some good news there, it would seem. Fertiliser prices are coming down. It would seem, however, that fuel prices are about to rise again. You might have heard a moment ago during the World Today program that the federal government's fuel excise relief, it's going to all change as of tomorrow. So the federal government winding back that discount to the fuel excise. They're not changing it completely tomorrow. It's a bit of a staged process, but there will be a change. Treasurer Jim Chalmers says the 32 cents per litre fuel discount, that's going to drop to 16 cents as of midnight tonight.
This week, we think for the first time, both petrol and diesel is cheaper than it was before the war in the Middle East began. But people are still under pressure. That's why we're extending this fuel price relief, this petrol and diesel tax cut, for another month at a tapered rate.
So there you go. The advice is perhaps think about fueling up this afternoon if you can. The consumer watchdog, the ACCC, has warned petrol stations not to take advantage of the price change and bump up their profits. I fueled up in Darwin the other day. I got diesel at $1.74, which is exactly what it was before the conflict in Iran started. So come full circle back to $1.74. Be interesting to see what that price is tomorrow, though. Just quickly to some resources news. Perth-based uranium company Deep Yellow has bought a stake in a joint venture that is located next to the Kakadu National Park. The company has told the ASX today that it's agreed to buy a 50% stake in the Cooper Creek project from Energy Resources of Australia. Now, ERA, of course, owns the nearby Ranger mine, which it is currently rehabilitating. Deep Yellow says it will pay ERA $648,000 for this stake in Cooper Creek, which is also part-owned by uranium giant Cameco. Deep Yellow says Cooper Creek is a highly prospective exploration opportunity. This company already owns several tenements in the Top End, as well as operations in Western Australia. It's also got some operations in Namibia in Southern Africa. So that's some resources news out today. Deep Yellow. Oh, what a name for a uranium company. It's got a stake in this joint venture project near the Kakadu National Park. We've got to go to the newsroom, folks. So I'll see you back here in 5 minutes for a chat with the Weather Bureau. Wonder if you got a little bit of rain overnight. There's been a few sprinkles about. Jimmy at the Humpty Doo Golf Club this afternoon says there was 6.5 millimetres in the gauge this morning. That'll keep the greens green. It's time to go to the newsroom. See you back here in five.
G'day, I'm Brad George, and I'm captain of the Humpty Doo Fire Brigade, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. In a moment, you'll meet a young ringer getting ready to head to the United States to pursue a career in college rodeo.
Mainly, I want to go to a college rodeo because there are coaches there to help me improve. And also, just the fact I can get on a lot of better quality horses and a lot more of them.
I'll admit, I've heard of college football, college basketball. That's a really big deal over in the US. But college rodeo? Yeah, unreal. Could it be a pathway for other budding athletes in the Northern Territory? You'll learn all about this in a moment. And as Catherine gets ready to celebrate its 100th birthday on the Country Hour this week, we are going into the archives and bringing new stories about Catherine's proud agricultural history. Before 1:30, we've got a story to share with you about a legend of the cattle industry, a legend of the transport industry. He's such a big deal, they named a highway after him. That story coming your way soon. And I'm loving your rabbit recipes. Thank you so much. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Sally Cutter's there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
Oh, not too bad, thanks.
Bit of rain about the Northern Territory for the back end of June. Jimmy at the Humpty Doo Golf Club is reporting 6.5 in the gauge. GH out at Middle Point says they've got 10 millimetres in the gauge. It's a little moist out there, Sally.
Yeah, certainly is. The top in the Territory is out at 0.4, so 10 millimetres. Adelaide River Station's had 10. We'll stick with the top end for the moment. Middle Point, our site out there, has got 6.6. Got to go down through all these Central Australian ones. Humpty Doo had 0.6. Then if you come back into Central Australia, Todd River at the Schwartz Crossing or Schwartz Crescent had 7.5 millimetres. Hugh Rivers had 6, along with Mount Lloyd. And Doolia was 5.8. Alice Springs Airport, 5.2. Bond Springs Turnoff, Wrigley Gorge, Big Dipper, Collier Creek all had 5 millimetres. Fink River, picked up 2.5, Wataka 2, Bond Springs 2 as well, and Mount St Charles 1.
And sorry, did we mention Adelaide River Station, 10 millimetres?
Yep. Yeah, yep, point, yeah. 10 millimetres, yep.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just looking at the radar this afternoon. In the top end, it would seem there's just a few sprinkles near Adelaide River Township. Just a few. And as for Alice Springs, well, a little bit of cloud around Sally, but it would seem the moisture's all headed over to Queensland now.
Yeah, or the moisture is going to fall out of the sky. It's relatively humid for the dew point's relatively high for Central Australia. So, if you're thinking it's humid for whatever humidity is high for that temperature, it is. Just because we've got those dew points up there at the moment.
Helen and Mount Riddick's just sent us a picture, and Helen's reporting at about 8 o'clock this morning. Thick fog out there along the Plenty Highway. And I'll have to send you this picture, Sally Cutter.
Yep.
You can see the yards in the foreground, but come the background of the photo, the trees and the rest of the fence line, boom, can't see it. Nice little pea super out there on the Plenty.
Yeah, we could see it down in the Simpson Desert quite easily on the satellite picture, and it looked like there also was some extending back up through there. So if you go further east, we were getting these funny visibility drops at Alice Springs Airport. So there was something going on there as well. So whether that was just mist or a bit of drizzle in there. But, yeah, we certainly having had that rain go through, and with the skies clearing off that little bit, it does allow that fog to form.
Okay, big question. We've got the Alice Springs show cattle sale on Thursday, and then the Alice Springs show itself on Friday, Saturday. What's the forecast?
Okay, Thursday's probably your best bet for no rain. For Alice, we're looking at 8 to 24, partly cloudy. We are seeing the rain started to develop on Friday. Only 20% chance of actually seeing anything. And 8 to 21. But if you're going to the show on Saturday, bring your gumboots, a jumper and a raincoat. Because it's going to be 7 to 13 and we could see up to 20 millimetres.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Cold and up to 20 millimetres. My goodness.
Yeah, and you're going to have starting to get those southeasterlies coming through because this cloud band isn't a surface trough per se. There's a little reflection of it, but it's mainly sort of higher up in the atmosphere. So we've got those southeasterlies undercutting the northwesterlies higher up, and it might be a little bit sort of on the breezy side, not too windy, but just enough that you add that wind chill factor in there as well.
Goodness me. How widespread will that rain be? Away from Alice Springs, how widespread could it be?
Well, it could be up into the Tanami, Lassiter. The heaviest falls will probably be over in the Lassiter district, and then Alice Springs extending right across the Simpson. And it will ease off during Sunday and sort of cleared by Monday. Might get some sort of that drizzly low cloud that we see on the southern slopes sort of going up to Alice Springs. After you've had decent rainfall, but the heaviest falls are certainly going to be back over the Tanami and southern Tanami and into the Leicester.
Okay. And just quickly, Sally, tomorrow, Territory Day, a.k.a. Cracker Night, any nasty winds on the forecast for tomorrow?
Probably, if there's going to be wind anywhere, it's going to be sort of southern Barkly, northeastern Simpson. Mm-hmm. The rest of the territory not too windy, but there's still going to be that wind around. Most of the rain's going to be down through that eastern parts of the NT and across the top end, but mainly for the western top end, mainly sort of morning and sort of easing off as we go through the afternoon.
Rightio. Thanks so much for your time today, Sally. I bought a rabbit today. Got one.
Ooh.
Not a live one. It's a carcass.
Yep.
And I've got this great recipe sent to me from John for rabbit pies, and someone else saying that rabbit is a key ingredient in the traditional Spanish paella. Had one in Spain, not bad at all, says someone here on the text.
Yeah. It's a very long time since I've had rabbit.
Likewise. It'd be well over a decade for myself. But
I'm talking more probably more than three decades ago.
Yeah, rightio. But if I have a win with this rabbit pie, I'll bring some over to the bureau. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
That's okay.
G'day, James McKenna here from Tipperary Station, running the lemon operation here, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
In the United States, college league basketball and college football is seriously big business.
Thank you, Valoa, trying to make up for it. Fires to the end zone.
But have you ever heard of college rodeo? Well, one young Aussie is about to head over to the States to start studying while also competing in college rodeo. His name is Jack Armstrong, and he caught up with our reporter, Charles Geary.
G'day, my name's Jack Armstrong and I'm from Inverell, New South Wales. So I'm on my way to Clarendon, Texas on the 16th of August to a college over there to study welding and go riding saddle bronks.
So you've gotten a bit of a scholarship over there. Tell us how that came about, be able to go to college for saddle bronc riding.
So I've been riding since 23, only seriously sort of since 25. Been trying to get into it, and I just got onto to a college over there from a school I did at the start of the year with Champion Living.
Got on to this college. Now, talk to us a little bit about your rodeo background. How did you get into the sport, and what's gotten you to stick around for, I guess, wanting to go over to the States now?
So I've always sort of been around rodeo and Western sort of world. Like, I grew up camp drafting on horses, and, yeah, I sort of never really took much interest until I came up north and sort of we just had a bit of a go at everything, and I just really love saddle bronks and the horses and thought I'd try and get a lot better and get into it. And yeah, I just think it's fun as, and it's the coolest thing.
Heading over to the States now, tell us about what you're hoping or what you're thinking this college program looks like. Have you spoken to your coaches over there much about it?
Yep, so I got onto the coach through recommendations from some people at a school at the start of the year, and I've spoken to him on Facebook and phone call. Yeah, so hopefully we'll have two, three buckouts a week plus rodeos and put a fair bit of time into gym and spur boards and the aim is just to get a lot better at saddle bronc, get as good as I can, put a lot more time and effort into it.
Why the move over to America? Obviously, there's a few circuits here. Why the move over more dedicate it to it in a college sense?
Mainly, I want to go to a college rodeo because there are coaches there to help me improve, and that's what I'm looking for, to fix little issues and, like, technical issues. And also, just the fact I can get on a lot of better quality horses and a lot more of them. So it's good in Australia, but the Americans just live for it, and that's the place to go.
Tell us a bit about some of the competition you'll be facing over there. Rodeo in America, it's pretty serious business.
So I'm not sure yet. From what I've heard, there's a pretty big competition over there, but with any luck, I'll put in the effort, and it should work out. Hopefully I'll do my best, and I think it'll be tough, but it should be good. I'm excited.
You hear and you see the footage and the videos of college football in America and college basketball, and, you know, how people really get around that college sporting sense and the students there as well. Are you kind of looking forward to that campus aspect as well as of American college sporting life?
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm keen to meet a heap of people over there and get a few contacts. I'm just keen to be around a heap of like-minded people with the rodeo on and just heap of people that want to get better and do well. And yeah, I'm really excited. Just help each other forward.
Finally, mate, there's definitely going to be a few people here who are keen on rodeo, or keen to get better at rodeo. This college aspect, this college avenue might be pretty new. It's news to me when I found out about it. What would you tell to people who are maybe looking at exploring this or as a way to get better at rodeo?
Biggest thing is just talk to everyone. Everyone's really good in the rodeo industry. Everyone's happy to help, and yeah, and just be willing to put the effort in. If you want to get better, the biggest thing I can say is put the effort in, put the time in, because otherwise I found out you just get hurt. Like, I've been hurt my shoulder when I was just mucking around. As soon as I started putting a lot more time and effort into it, it's when my riding's really improved. and just ask, talk to everyone. Everyone's lovely. Everyone wants to help. It's a really good industry.
That is soon to be college rodeo rider Jack Armstrong speaking to Charles Geary, and we wish Jack all the best. It's 17 past one. You are tuned into the Country Hour. Catherine is celebrating its 100th birthday this week, and on the Country Hour, we are bringing you stories this week that celebrate the proud agricultural history of the town and of the region.
Yeah, I got six decks to Darwin holding up the Buntine Road. Just rolled out of hand.
In the 1960s and 70s, Noel Buntine built a transport company that revolutionised the territory's pastoral industry. For years, Buntine Roadways was unrivalled in Australia's livestock transport game, and Noel used his influence to fight for better roads and better conditions for the cattle industry. An icon of the top end, an icon of Catherine, John Daly reports.
So before Buntine Roadways came along, much of the territory's cattle industry relied on droving or moving cattle across vast distances on horseback to get their animals to market.
Now, I first started in the trucking business in Alice Springs in 1954. It was sort of a business opportunity which seemed to be available. I'd always been interested in trucks. And the country was dependent on transport everywhere, and it seemed to me a good form of business to enter into at the time. We are operating trucks from Meekatharra in West Australia as far back into Queensland as Charters Towers, Longreach, even to Brisbane in the northern New South Wales. In addition, we operate...
That's Noel Buntine himself talking to ABC's A Big Country back in 1975. In the late 50s, Noel bought his first Mack truck and named it the High and the Mighty, and began travelling some of the roughest and most remote stock routes, like the Murrinjay, and carted cattle to the Wyndham Meatworks in WA's far north. And it seems crazy to think that any truckie could conquer those flooded river crossings and rough dirt roads to nowhere at that time, but Noel quickly built a reputation for being on time, or being bun time, as they used to call it.
Hello, I'm Patty Buntine, and I've been asked to speak on some history of my husband, my late husband, Noel Buntine.
Now, in 1962, Noel started Buntine Roadways. You met him in 63, but what were those early days of the business like?
Lots of tyres on the ground and lots of people banging and crashing and trying to change tyres on road trains, and it was pretty basic and pretty bare and really hard work.
It grew into an empire. How did that happen?
It just the way Noel worked, I think. He liked to do things well if he could. It was very, very hard work. Very hard, you know. It was dirt roads and tired truck drivers and just constantly trying to make a living, and it eventually evolved, you know. He achieved a good reputation of being on time all the time, Buntine, as they say. A lot of people started off their little cattle carrying companies, but they never went any further than that. But, I mean, he had a lot of heartache. It wasn't easy. And he eventually just threw his... I don't know what you call it, maybe a little bit of charisma, personality, hard work. He never did ask them to do anything that he couldn't do, and in those early years he drove himself all the time. So family life was, you know, that was there, and work was work. So,
When you say it was pretty hard work, what do you mean?
Well, there was that many busted tyres, trucks breaking down. You had to learn how to fix them yourself or stay there until you could get someone out. Just rough country.
So he was the driver, he was the mechanic, he was the vet.
He was everything, yeah. Well, they all have, not only Noel, but all the men that drove in that era had to be a bit of everything.
What was he like as a boss? I mean, you didn't work for him, but I imagine you probably had a sense as to what he was like as a superior.
He wanted what was right. He was demanding, I think. He was tough, they used to say, but he also wouldn't ask them to do anything he couldn't do and expect them to do a job that they were paid for. You know, like he would sack a person one day and put him back on a couple of days later. But, you know, like, do the job you were paid to do. Come on, let's do it.
Yeah. Did he have a good work-life balance when he was building Buntine roadways?
Definitely not. No, we raised our children by ourselves for many, like 6 weeks at a time or more. You know, we just, and all of the truck drivers' wives did the same. They just, the men went and came back when they came back.
At its peak, Buntine Roadways effectively monopolised the territory's livestock carting business and became the biggest road train operator in the Southern Hemisphere, with depots in Katherine, Alice Springs, Wyndham, Tennant Creek and Mount Isa. And Noel Buntine was also a powerful lobbyist who fought for better roads and conditions for the transport and cattle industries.
Just by getting bigger and bigger, I think, and demanding more and more, like the roads were all dirt roads, so they had to be more successful and to go ahead, they had to get the government to put in bitumen roads. Any sort of infrastructure that was, you know, road trainy, like for cattle carting and all that sort of stuff, I guess.
And I suppose he was a bit of a force when it came to lobbying government to create that kind of public infrastructure.
He was a little bit on the shyer side. He was never forceful in that way. Maybe he was in Kirby's after 5 o'clock with a few beers, but not generally speaking, if you read what some people say about him, he was quite determined in what he wanted, but he knew how to ask the right questions and how to approach people, I guess you'd say.
How did the livestock carting methods and trucks evolve during Noel's time in the industry?
Well, yes, well, there was a lot of problems with bruising at the time, and that's what the meatworks were concerned about mostly. Then they wanted to cart more and more cattle, so they developed the triples, as you see, you know, three trailers.
So he played a role in getting that broader adoption of the cattle crates as well as the triples, the road trains for transporting livestock.
And the double decks, you know, the decks going upstairs too, where your cattle can, you know, go on the bottom and then upstairs. Yeah. And all, you know, the bottom line is you've got to get them to the meatworks as calm and unbruised as you possibly can.
In 1981, Noel Buntine sold his business, but the change of ownership didn't work out too well. Buntine Roadways was put into receivership within a few years, and Noel, who was then in his 50s, decided to buy it back and rename it Road Trains of Australia, or RTA, which has now grown to be the largest privately owned livestock transporter in Australia.
He decided to take it back on again, and you talk about mental stress. The mental health in those days must have been over the top. Mm. But, you know, those men didn't buckle, you know, they just got on with it. Maybe they had a few visits to Kirby's Hotel, but they still had a lot of stress and what have you. Probably contributed to his death in the long run, you know, but smoking did anyway, but yeah, the mental health they had in those days was so much more than compared to what people have got these days, you know.
When did Noel pass in the end?
94.
Yeah.
He had a heart attack in 93 in November, and then decided he was doing some work in the paddock, and then when I came home he said, "Oh, I think I've got pneumonia." I said, "You haven't got pneumonia." Anyway, I said, "I'm taking you to the doctor." So we went in there and sat there, and he just sat on the chair and went to heaven. Mm. In the doctor's surgery, but they brought him back to life about 15 minutes later. Mm. And then we did all the tests, and then in January on the Gold Coast, he had another heart attack then.
Noel Buntine has had a highway named after him, where there is quite a sizeable memorial to him up on the hill. How did that come about, and I suppose how did you feel to have him honoured in that way?
Well, I thought it was fantastic, but Mike Reed was behind all that, because I suppose that he travelled all those with the road trains, you know, and he was an instigator in getting them all bituminised and fixed up.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Paddy Buntine, about your late husband. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Daly catching up with Paddy Buntine. A big day tomorrow for the town of Katherine as it celebrates its centenary. It is time on the Country Hour to head to the sale yards of all the latest prices this afternoon from Roma. Here's David Friend.
With the end of the financial year upon us, Roma agents yarded 8,471 head. A very good quality yarding presented with all categories represented. The market very solid throughout. At the time of this interim report, yearling steers 200 to 280 kilos, sold from 428 to 600 cents a kilo to restockers. Yearling steers 280 to 330 kilos also improved to make to 596 cents to average 565 cents a kilo to restockers. Yearling steers 330 to 400 kilos made from 420 to 590 cents a kilo to restockers. Yearling steers 400 to 480 kilos selling from 454 to 559 cents a kilo to restockers. Yearling steers over 480 kilos made to 500 cents a kilo to lot feeders. Growing steers 500 to 600 kilos made to 452. Bullocks over 600 kilos to 438 to 460 cents a kilo to processors. And bulls over 600 kilos to 452. This has been David Friend from National Livestock Reporting Service at Roma.
Thank you for that, David. A reminder, the Alice Springs Show Cattle Sale, it's on this Thursday. 10 o'clock start at the Bonning Yards. About 4,000 head of Centralian cattle going under the hammer. I am joined in the studio by Sam Parry, who's got some bird flu news.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. In Canberra just a short time ago, the Federal Agriculture Minister, Julie Collins, was speaking at a press conference, and she announced that CSIRO testing has confirmed another case of H5 avian influenza detected in WA. So this is the fifth migratory seabird now that's been found with a positive result for H5 bird flu, with three others confirmed in WA and one in South Australia.
Not good on the text. Judith says, Matt, looking forward to the rodeo at the waterfront this Saturday. As for rabbit, never tried it. My kids would think it would be just like offal food, but I'd like to give it a try one day. It's on my bucket list, says Judith. Hey, Judith, if my rabbit pie pans out well, I'll invite you along. I've got high hopes for the pie. Keep it rural.